Hey, glad you can make it. And welcome to the Employee Cycle Podcast, where we talk to HR innovators, thought leaders, and even some disruptors about the latest in HR trends, HR tech, and you guessed it, HR data. Well, you've heard enough of me talking. Now let's start the show. Hello, and welcome to the Employee Cycle HR Podcast. I'm your host for today, Bruce Marable. And today, I'm very excited to chat with the awesome Samantha Glassberg, Director of People Operations at Stitch. And today, we're going to talk about creating a fair and transparent hiring process that drives diversity. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I also must note that this is the first podcast that I'm doing in person. So I almost feel like I now have to have a podcast studio. This is very intimate. So I need to ask the question that I always ask everyone, which is, how did you end up in HR?
Yeah, so I totally fell into this. I went to college and I, like many people who are 18, had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up.
Okay. But,
I lived in an area that said you need to go get a four-year education. So I did that and I went to a small school in rural North Carolina and ended up graduating with a degree in marketing. And I had thought that I was going to end up working for an agency, maybe doing like pharmaceutical marketing or something like that. Obviously very big in the Philadelphia area. And that was the thing that I was familiar with. I also just happened to graduate at a time when it was not really a great time to get a job. Okay. It was, at the downturn of the economy back in, 2008, 2009. So I was competing with everyone who had lost their jobs to find one. And so somehow, very fortunately, 3 weeks after graduating, I landed a job at a creative and marketing staffing firm. And in my mind, I was like, you know what? It's a job. It's going to pay the bills. I have student loans. I love people. I was like, I was the recruitment chair in my sorority. So okay. Somehow something clicked with me. I was like, but at the very least, I'm working with these ad agencies and, maybe I can end up landing at one. And lo and behold, it did not take long for me to realize that I had zero interest in marketing or working for an agency, but that I truly loved recruiting and the people side of the business. And so, I ended up spending 6 years at a company called The Boss Group.
Yeah.
They're a creative and marketing staffing firm. And my role evolved many times over my years there. But recruiting was always at the focus of that. But towards the end of my tenure there, I recognized that I wanted something more. I think just by nature and staffing, you get to work with some really awesome companies. Mm-hmm. And then you work with some companies who are less awesome. and I realized that I didn't love having to place people at those less than awesome companies. But when you work for a staffing firm, there's P&L, the bottom line. The Boss Group is certainly ethical. But I mean, yeah, just sometimes you have bad managers and things like that. And I wanted to fix those problems, but that wasn't my responsibility. And so I pretty much knew at that point, I was like, okay, I think it's time for me to go in-house. And I need to see how this role evolves. Because I want to see the people that I'm placing, the people that I'm placing are being successful. They're making a difference in these companies. And I never see them after their first day. And so very fortunately, I had a great network and, I had a bunch of folks that I was connected to, in the Philly scene. And I knew that I was very interested in the tech community. And I ended up getting connected to Bob Moore, mm-hmm. former, CEO of RJ Metrics. And they just happened to be hiring for a recruiter. We talked during my interview, about how that position could evolve. And lo and behold, I was hired, as RJ Metrics had just secured a Series B. So between the two, they had raised a little over $20 million in venture capital-backed fund, and we were scaling. And so I focused on recruitment, but by nature, when you're working with a startup that's growing that quickly, the people side starts to come into play. And that's where I would say that like my true HR hat kind of started to come to fruition a little bit more. My background, recruitment certainly falls under that umbrella, but really kind of dabbling outside of the area of recruitment, started about 3 years ago when I joined RJ Metrics, which is, now today known as Stitch.
Got it. And I can definitely tell that you're a very positive person because you said working with awesome companies and then working with less awesome companies versus working with companies that suck.
This is a podcast. I felt the need to be somewhat politically correct.
No, no, not at all. This is a safe space for all HR professionals.
Isn't that my line?
Maybe, maybe. That is true. That is true. But before we continue, I'm not sure if everyone who's listening to this podcast is aware of Stitch and what Stitch does. So can you just give a quick explanation, summary of what is Stitch? What do you guys do?
Yeah, so Stitch, we are an ETL tool for developers. So, you know, essentially what we're helping companies do is consolidate their data. Okay. So if you think about an organization, they're using dozens of different systems. You know, they have marketing platforms, support platforms, sales platforms, and all of those individual tools are generating data. And where Stitch comes in and does is we're able to connect to all those disparate data sources and extract all of that data and put everything into one destination warehouse that the client chooses.
Got it. So this wasn't a question that I actually had in my list, but it's something that I've been thinking about lately. Do you think that by working at a data company, it makes you more data-driven in HR?
Most certainly. And a big part of that just has to do because of the audience that I have here.
Yep.
The individuals that thrive and, have worked at Stitch and, formerly RJ Metrics are all very data driven individuals. So I'm sure if you look at, any of the HR personality or leadership assessments that you could do, I'm immediately inclined to think of like the colors assessment, true colors. Mm-hmm. And I'm a blue. I'm much more people oriented in feelings. I work with a lot of greens, and greens like facts, they like data, they like logic.
Right.
And it's not to say that they don't necessarily hear the feelings blue side of it, but that's if you're going to, move forward with something, data wins. Again, another value here at Stitch and also at RJ, it's on the wall, data always wins. So yeah, it certainly makes me much more data driven in, any approach that I have.
Got it. So today's topic is creating a fair and transparent hiring process that drives diversity. So a lot of people are thinking, what does a fair and transparent recruiting process look like? And why does it drive diversity?
Yeah, so I want to first go on record in saying that this is still a learning process for us. But with setting the foundation for Stitch, for us personally, we have always at our core, wanted to treat people right. It has always been one of our, core values falling under do the right thing. And, I think by nature, if you've asked anyone that's ever gone through our recruitment process, they would always say that they felt respected. And that is, when I came into RJ Metrics and even with Stitch, one of the first things that I am training our interviewers on is we want every candidate to walk out of this experience wishing that they got the job to work here, because we know that this is a special place. We know that we treat people right when we're here. So let's build an interview process that shows that. And I think that's something that a lot of companies don't do. They think that they have to, use some tactics that are aggressive or that make candidates comfortable because mm-hmm. they want to see, how does the candidate really thrive, under pressure. But I think that what companies forget is that for a candidate, for you have 20 interviews today, 20 interviews this week. You have 5 interviews today. But for that candidate, this is their one interview. And this might, they might really want to work for you. And it doesn't mean that it's going to work out, but you should respect that. And so, obviously, when people walk in the door here as employees, we're treating them right from day one. But we want to extend that to our candidate process. So, going back in our history, that is something that was always meaningful to us is, building a process. And I think that that helped set us up for success when we decided, okay, we need to address, the problem that I think, that exists in tech right now, which is that there is generally speaking a very large lack of diversity. Most technology companies are predominantly white male driven. I think that if you look at our demographics today, we're happy to talk about, I guess you could say our EEO data, but, we fall right into that category. So straight up data, we are 70%. White male. I'm sorry, we're 70% male. And in terms of, our racial diversity, we are 90% white. And that's something that we want to start moving the bar on. And I think that when you look at that data, you have to start reflecting on that. You have to say, well, what are we doing to try to make a difference? And I think that in speaking to a lot of, you know, folks that specialize in this field here in Philadelphia, one of the first things that they said was, you've got to reflect on your recruiting process. You have to look back. And I would talk to them about, you know, the values that we had here and how we treat our people and a lot of the processes and the and just the benefits that we have in place for our team members. And, you know, the first thing I heard was, you're calling attention to the wrong types of things, you know, on your careers page. You know, there, you take for granted that you have flexible scheduling and, you know, the candidates can take time off when they need it. But that's something that you should be talking about. So first, let's talk about how you're, you know, what types of candidates that you may be attracting coming to Stitch. So looking at your funnel. But, you know, the fairest thing that you can do in your recruitment process in terms of trying to make a shift through diversity mm-hmm. is making it fair for everyone. And so I kind of began a personal journey of looking into that and, you know, ultimately came after it's gone through, I would say, a couple of evolutions, and I am most certain that it will go through another series of evolutions. Mm-hmm. But we came up with the recruiting process that we have today. And what was awesome is we didn't have to make too many changes. A lot of the things that we were already doing were best practices, but we changed the order of things and changed a couple of things around. So going back to your original question, you know, what is a fair and what does a fair recruiting process look like? Yep. It's giving candidates the opportunity to show that they have the skills to do the job. You know, it is focusing on an interview process that is fairly assessing candidates. So, you know, as I mentioned first, I feel very fortunate to work for a company where, like I said, we were already doing a lot of things right. You know, one of the traps that I know that Silicon Valley fell into, which I think that they're starting to work their way out. But, you know, the first thing is the resume review. You know, where did candidates go to college? Did they go to an Ivy League school? We have never, ever cared about that here. Education has never come up as a part of our interview process. But that was the first step to me that says, you know, when you're looking at unconscious bias, you know, when you're reviewing somebody's resume, that is the first thing that could potentially come into play. So what we ultimately decided to do is for every single position that we are hiring for here, we set up a maximum of one qualification. If I can actually get rid of the qualification, I will. But working for a startup, sometimes you do need experience in a certain area. We do have a board that we're, you know, accountable for. And so, you know, a perfect example is we were recently hiring for some sales roles. And in that, rather than saying that they had to work for specific companies, they had to have this many years of experience, or they should have done this, the only thing that I looked for on the resume at the high level overview was, do they have 1 year of experience doing any sort of sales in a SaaS company? Mm. Not role, not like seniority, but that was the only thing that I was looking for. And to actually flip the to another example of that, so we recently hired a content marketing manager. He started yesterday. And in that interview process, we tried to broaden that scope even further. And the only thing that I looked for on a resume was, you have 1 year of professional writing experience. It could have been for a newspaper. It could have been in a marketing role. We didn't count social media because we do need some long content. But that was it. And so what we're doing with that initial, that's where I'm coming in and doing the resume review, is we then send candidates an email that basically explains why we're going to do what we're about to do. And essentially I say that we have decided that we want to make sure that we have a fair recruiting process. And in doing that, we're trying on our end to eliminate unconscious bias. And so with that, rather than hopping on a phone call or doing any sort of resume review, the first step of our project is going to be for them to complete a small task that aligns directly with the role at hand. And so what we're giving candidates the opportunity to do is to show us that they have the skills required to do the role. And so these tasks are not supposed to take any more than, I would say, 90 to 120 minutes is our goal for that, because we do want to be respectful of the candidate's time. But we give them a deadline for that, which is almost always at least over a week, somewhere maybe even 2 weeks, because again, we want to be respectful of their schedules. And I let them know that what we're going to do is send that task to the hiring manager to review. And the hiring manager is reviewing the task, not the candidate's name, not the candidate's resume, not anything about their background, who they're tied to. They're looking at the project. And that's how they're ultimately deciding who comes in to interview with Stitch. With that, once we have the finalist list, I hop on phone calls with these candidates to do a high-level overview, just to make sure that what they're looking for is what we're able to offer, and to make sure that before they come in that they know that we're answering all of those difficult questions that they have, including addressing compensation first. You know, that's the first thing that I ask candidates is, what are you looking for in your next role in terms of compensation? And please note that I say, what are you looking for? Because I'm never asked asking candidates about their previous compensation. Mm-hmm. I think in Philadelphia it is illegal, but it's not necessarily illegal anywhere, but in terms of an ethical standard. And, you know, if you're certainly looking at making a fair recruitment process in terms of inclusion and diversity, that's, I think, the right way to phrase that is, where are you looking to be in that next role? The reason I ask candidates is because I find all too frequently candidates get to the end of the process and they end up in an uncomfortable negotiation because the company who has the power is not talking about their budget up front. And then they're, you know, putting a candidate in the position at the end where they're saying, well, our budget is 80,000. And the candidate's saying, well, I was looking for 90. And yeah, maybe sometimes they can make it work, but this candidate has to pay their bills, put a roof over their head, food on the table, maybe, put money away towards the kids, college fund. That's a big question. And so I address it up front because I want to be respectful to the candidate. And a lot of people, when I tell folks that I do that as early as I do, they kind of like cringe, like, ooh, that's really uncomfortable. And, you know, it's negotiation. Like, you never want to be the one to say the number first. Right. I'm always happy to talk about our ranges for positions. But with that, I always tell candidate the range might be, you know, a $50,000 range because we're open to hiring different skill levels. But that I want to make sure that I know what they need and what's important to them. So with that, we've checked all of our boxes. I've made sure that the candidate is interested and has all of the information that they need. And at that point, for the most part, that isn't used too much for vetting, but we'll select which folks come in to interview. And at the high level for our interview process, we do group interviews. So everyone on our interview team has a fair say in whether or not we hire a candidate. So we build out hiring teams. And with that, we come up with the questions that are all skills-based questions. Again, so we're focusing a lot on putting the candidate in the shoes of, okay, so Bruce, if you were in this position, mm-hmm. And this thing happened, and this is a high likelihood, how would you handle that? Rather than looking back over historic experience, or asking questions that are not actually gauging whether or not a candidate, would be, able to do the job at hand. And so, with that, at the end of the interview process, we get together and we ultimately are doing scorecards based that are focused that, are asking individuals here to focus on, does this candidate have the skills to do this position? So again, we're aligning it more so that way. And so with that, like at the high level, I walk through that interview process because, you know, the goal of that interview process is to give everyone the opportunity to succeed throughout it. And, you know, in the hiring processes that we've had, you know, since kind of making these changes, it's been really interesting to me. And I'll look to our content marketing manager position that we recently interviewed for. We had such a diverse group of candidates come in from so many different perspectives. Like, I think diversity has a lot of meanings, but first, in just in terms of backgrounds, I mean, we actually had someone who beat out other candidates who really hadn't had a lot of writing experience historically, but she came through the interview process. And at the end, we were like, you know, if this wasn't our first person, we would totally hire her. And there was just somebody else who we ultimately ended up hiring that had like a mm-hmm. lot of great experience, but we left that interview process feeling that this candidate who, had we just looked at her resume, we would have never even, you know, considered or spoken to possibly. Right. That to me just shows that, A, this is working. We're assessing candidates on the right things, their ability to do a job rather than their experience doing it before. But B, also just looking at the statistics, since implementing this, our interview pools are much, much more diverse. Something else that we also did internally was we put the Rooney Rule into effect. Are you familiar with that?
I know you told me about the Rooney Rule a couple of weeks ago when I looked it up. But it would be great if you could tell our listeners what the Rooney Rule is.
Yeah. So the Rooney Rule actually came into play with the NFL. And so essentially, I think it was like 10 years ago, you know, the NFL was looking at their pool of head coaches and realized that there was a pretty, there was a very much a lack of diversity there. And so essentially, they put this rule in place that when they were interviewing for head coaches, there had to be a candidate from an underrepresented group in the interview process. And lo and behold, they put that into place and, they certainly saw the data start to, I think, represent that, a much more diverse pool across the NFL. And since then, they have also put it in place internally. So for like executive positions or positions on the business side of the organization, they're also including, women in that now. So with that, I think a lot of people have become a lot more familiar with the Rooney Rule recently because it was actually recommended to Uber in I think they hired a team of lawyers to kind of
that sounds like a company that needs it.
Yeah, to vet to vet them after everything that's happened recently. And one of the recommendations was that, and that's honestly that's where I heard from it and And for me, it was for me and for our leadership team, it was a no brainer. Like, okay, well, let's put our money where our mouth is. This is meaningful to us. We are not going to hire a single person in this organization unless we have two candidates from underrepresented groups on our interview team. And underrepresented groups for us is, everything that wouldn't fall into the category of being a white male. And obviously some of that stuff we can track for, some of that stuff we cannot. But, when I put that back into place in July, I would be lying. And I say this to the, the HR professionals that are hearing me right now saying, well, what am I going to do if I need to hire someone and my interview team isn't diverse? And now I have somebody that my team wants to hire, but we can't hire because we committed to this thing. Because that's the immediate reaction, right? Since putting this rule in place and since changing our recruitment process, I've never had to ask that question because our interview pools are more diverse than they ever have been. Just by making a couple of the tweaks, everything that we did in that interview process that I told you about was something we were doing before. But just by tweaking a couple of things, changing the way, the order in which we did it, and then ultimately, putting less constraint on a resume review up front, we opened up our candidate pool. And so, we're not hiring at a rate today where we're going to see our numbers shift in a crazy way. But for me personally, the most rewarding moment in, all of the work that we've put towards this was I recently had a candidate write an email after going through this interview process. And basically this candidate's response was, I didn't get the job and that's okay. I'm going to hold every other interview that I go through to this standard because this is the first time that I felt that I was actually vetted fairly.
Wow.
And it immediately reminded me of a conversation that I had with a consultant, which ties it back to your initial question is the best thing that you can do, for a diverse applicant is vet them fairly to even the playing field and to make sure that everyone going through your process has the exact same opportunity. And for me, that was like full circle. I'm not saying that what we're doing today is perfect. I'm sure, like I said, we will evolve this process, every single time that we interview, but we're looking at it, we're setting metrics, and we're making a commitment to it.
So that was a lot.
Yeah.
I need to break all that down. So let's start off with unconscious bias.
Mm-hmm.
What kinds of unconscious bias are you dealing with? How are you dealing with it? Where did you get the list from? You've already spoken about some of the things around not seeing the name, not bringing up compensation at the end of the interview process, but instead bringing it up in the beginning. I'm not sure if this was a part of the reason why you gave people a week to answer the questions, but I was reading something a couple of weeks ago that said you're being biased towards people, particularly with children who are trying to get a job. If you want to give them 2 days to be able to do some type of take home test, because not only do they have to work, but they have to take care of their kids, whereas somebody who is younger, they may have all the time in the world, so they can bang out something in 24, 48 hours. So what were the considerations that you put in place coming up with all these different types of unconscious bias, and what are all the different types?
So first and foremost with unconscious bias, we're talking about it, and that's how you make unconscious bias conscious. You start talking about your bias. And so we again have a lot of work to do on this in this field, and I'm looking I'm hopefully looking to find a consultant that could come in and connect with our team on a little bit more personal level about where our unconscious bias is rooted personally. But we're all biased. Our surroundings, our upbringing, that we're all biased in some way. And that, is based on science and just the fact that we cannot function, without, the way that our brain is built. Our brain is built to make decisions based on history and based on the things that we know without us knowing. And that is a survival technique. And a lot of that aids to unconscious bias. I say that not to say, I think a lot of times people are like, well, we all have unconscious bias. It's okay. It's not okay. But, let's first just address like what it is and like recognize, okay, a part of it is out of your control unless you're really trying to do something about it. So again, like step one is just talking about it. And you know, we try to, you know, start conversations here internally. We have a diversity and inclusion channel on Slack. We're sharing relevant articles. We're encouraging conversations. And I think just again, making unconscious bias conscious has been a step in the right direction for us. To answer your question about the project. So that is the project step phase has always been a part of our interview process since my first interview here at RJ Metrics. So that was about 150 hires ago, or maybe 100 hires ago. I'm not sure. And we've always been very generous in the amount of time that we have candidates to do with that. And for us in particular, it's just about doing the right thing. And for me, it's never occurred that, I mean, it has certainly occurred to me that somebody with children or a full-time job is going to have, you know, less time that's free than anyone. But for me, our reasoning around always giving, you know, a generous amount of time is that I want you to put your best foot forward. And, you know, I don't have children right now, and I'm certainly younger. But if somebody dropped a project on my lap and said, get it done within 48 hours, I'm in grad school. I'm working full time. I have a husband and a house that I need to run, and I'm not going to put my best foot forward. So for us, the basis of that decision was always rooted in just doing the right thing for people. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, there are some projects in particular that we do loosely time just because we don't want candidates to spend too much time on it.
Right.
But when we time it, I say, you tell me when I send it to you. You pick the schedule. You own this. Mm. And candidates will say, like, you know what? I need a weekend. Can I do it in like a week and a half? And my answer is always yes. Like, I want you to put your best foot forward, because as the employer, as the company that's hiring, what good are you doing if you are forcing people to do, you know, work that's not their best? Like, you should be building an interview process that allows people to be their best, because that's how you're fairly vetting them. And that's how you walk away from an interview process with the confidence that if you didn't hire someone, that you know that you vetted them fairly. You don't ever want to look back and be like, ooh, we maybe should have asked better questions or whatnot. So for us, that's always where the decision was rooted. For other organizations listening, please consider that. Please consider that when you're putting timelines around that, that you do have, you know, families, that you have people with children, that you have people that are in school, or just remember that people have a full-time job. You know, we live in a day and time where people spend more time at work mm-hmm. than they do at home. And to put a lot of pressure on someone who has a full-time job that is potentially looking to leave, you're not going to get the best out of them if you do that.
Right.
It's not what the candidate deserves. That's not what you deserve. You deserve to see their best too. This is a, you know, interview processes are mutual, they should be mutually beneficial.
Hey, podcast listeners, we're about halfway through this episode, so now it's time for a word from our sponsor. But don't worry, we'll be back.
Hello, HR. It's me, your HR data. And I need to apologize. I'm sorry for being all over the place. I'm sorry for being difficult. I'm sorry for not being there for you. But it's not my fault. You put me in different HR systems and messy spreadsheets. But guess what? I now have a new friend, and their name is Employee Cycle. They can put all of me in one HR dashboard for you and keep me updated and simple so we'll better understand each other. Look, we're smarter when we're working together, so if you want me to show you my full potential, please go to employeecycle.com to get your free demo today. That's employeecycle.com. Promise me you'll go. Our relationship depends on it.
So I know talking a lot about diversity. Diversity is in the blogs, is on podcasts. We talk about diversity in politics, religion. Diversity is a word that people are always using. So I need to ask you, Sam, what does diversity mean? And I want to give a caveat. I mean, you're a white woman.
Yep.
You're working at a company that is 90% white, and there have been people recently who have come out and said, well, diversity doesn't necessarily mean diversity of gender or diversity of ethnicity, but if I'm a white guy in Denver, and then I'm a white guy in Philly, and I'm a white guy in Atlanta, one is outdoorsy, and another one is East Coast, and another one is down south, and so we all had different upbringings, and so we're all different, so that's diversity. How do you feel about that?
Oh, okay. How do I feel about that?
First, you can answer diversity, and then you can say, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I'm looking at diversity, and like, like you said, there are a lot of ways that you can look at it. Am I looking at it as diversity of thought? Am I looking in, you know, in regards to thought leadership? Am I looking at it in terms of diversity by EEO data? Mm-hmm. But for me, it's having a group, you know, diversity is defined in making sure that you have representatives of all groups, and recognizing the value in having a diverse team. And going into kind of your question, kind of about how do I feel in general about, how do I feel in general about the statements that I've heard? And like you said, other folks saying, I mean, this is a tough one. My view in particular, is that I think that, you know, I immediately think of just the word privilege, and recognizing, you know, when you have privilege and when those around you do not, and recognizing what that privilege has given you, and recognizing that. And, you know, I don't know why it came to mind, but something immediately came to mind, and it was a video I saw, on Facebook the other day that just talked about privilege and just recognizing that, you know, the race isn't fair. And I think that that's something that's really important. And that's when I think of diversity and I think about the things that, you know, we want to accomplish here at Stitch, but the things that I personally want to be a part of, I want to even the playing field. I want to make it fair so that everyone has the same shot at, you know, accomplishing their goals and their dreams. And, you know, that's what I in particular am looking to do. And we're trying here at Stitch to create a culture that, you know, is, you know, inclusive and respectful and, you know, breeds that type of environment. But I think that, you know, to under individuals that are asking that question, you know, making the statements that you had said, you know, I'd encourage them to think about the word privilege, and maybe, you know, to that white guy in Denver, to think about what privilege has given him. Yep. And think about maybe how, you know, what you can do to even the playing field for everyone.
So with that, the other day I had a conversation with another tech co-founder, and 9 times out of 10, when I'm talking to a fellow tech co-founder, CEO, they're a white male, because that's just, it's what it is. And I was asking him, I said, what would make you want to make your company more diverse? And it was an interesting answer, because he said, well, I see all these reports and I see the EEO data and I see the diversity data, but that doesn't make me want to jump out like, oh shit, you know, Forrester or Gartner or TechCrunch put out this report and said, you know what, your company needs to be more diverse because your company will be better if it's more diverse. It's like, yeah, well, a lot of the times I am trying to just hire the best people as quickly as possible. And I know this isn't for every industry, but specifically for tech, I just raised $250,000. I raised $2 million. I have a B round at 7 million, 20 million, 50 million, 100 million. And I'm going to call it the excuse that I've heard is that I'm looking to hire the best people as quickly as possible. And so to then put that burden on me to slow down the hiring process to make it more diverse isn't fair or slows things down or a lot of other reasons as to why they can't do it. So my question to you is, what do you think would make a person from privilege really want to hire a diverse workforce?
I think you're asking me to answer a question that I don't know that we as a society have answered yet, unfortunately.
Yep. And I don't think we have the answer to it, but I'm curious about your opinion from all the people who are going to be listening to this podcast. I'm sure there will be at least a few people who are like, you know what? I fit into that bucket.
Yeah.
And we're not expecting for you to just change the whole mindset of every single tech founder or every CEO,
right?
or founder. But if you could on this podcast, then, you know, we'd both be making history here.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that you kind of already talked about it. And I mean, yeah, you know what? I being a people person, my wish would be that everyone's core, we just wanted to do the right thing. And for me, this is doing the right thing. And I'm so fortunate to work for a company where doing the right thing is something that, you know, we're putting our money where our mouth is. And that's something that we care about. But I recognize that that's not the case for everyone else. So, you know, for those tech founders that you're talking to, those that may be listening on this podcast, yeah, you might be making, you might have just raised 5 million, but maybe if you had a more diverse team, you could have raised 10. Like, there is science, like, it is fact fact that if you have a more diverse team, you are going to run a better business. You see these articles all of the time online where they're talking about it. They're not just making up those statistics. There is, you know, there is evidence that having a more diverse team, having a more diverse organization is going to be better for your business. So cool. If you just want to settle for, you know, what you're doing now, that's fine. But maybe, you know, if you need a reason, and I don't know that I think that you should, but I guess for that, you know, that group out there that needs that reason, your business could be better. Your business could be better because, you know, by, you know, having a diverse organization, you're by nature just going to have, you know, diversity of thought. And you're going to have individuals that think of things that you never thought of before. And I immediately am thinking of a panel that I was at recently, and I'm forgetting the name of it. But the moderator of the panel was actually on the D&I committee for the London Olympics. And he talked about how by having, you know, a diverse team, how different individuals brought things to the table that had never been thought of before. So it was, and I'm hopeful not to butcher this, but I think that they needed, like someone on the team had suggested like Ramadan, like fasting packs or something be sold at the, like the London Olympics. And, it ended up generating like millions of dollars by them having this, like this thing that this idea that came from an individual that like had that individual been there, not been there, nobody else would have thought of that because that's not something that we're familiar with. So I think, you know, I wish I would have come up with a much better example of that, but that was the one that kind of stood out to me. But just by having individuals that have different life experiences than you, you're going to have people that are pushing you, that are challenging you to think differently about what you are doing. And from a business perspective, you've got to have diversity of thought. You have to have people challenging what you do in, you know, in any time, but definitely today. And you know what? So maybe there's someone out there that you, you know, if you just waited 1 week to interview them, if you slowed down a little bit on the hiring side, someone that could change your organization in a way that you didn't even think of today because they have a perspective that is completely unlike yours. So, you know, my recommendation, slow down. You know, there's nothing worse than hiring the wrong person, but, you know, the wrong person doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, the wrong person and the fact that they did not do or succeed in that role. But like there could be someone better out there, and there's always going to be a time frame somewhere around interview process, like interviewing. But slow down. It's worth it. It's worth it to make sure that, you know, you have done your due diligence, and that you are, you know, looking at an applicant pool of, you know, folks that could bring in, you know, different perspectives.
So one of the reasons why a lot of HR and professionals who manage people, organizations, and operations like the podcast is because we dig deep into the tactical level of things. Mm-hmm. So let's start from the beginning. Someone wants to do this. HR professional, someone's in charge of the people operation. They want to do this. They're very impressed by the way that you've explained this, they bought into what you're saying and say, you know what? I'm going to take a stance. I'm going to take a pledge. I'm going to do what Sam is doing and make sure that our organization is more diverse by removing unconscious bias and creating a fair and transparent hiring process that drives diversity. Where do they start?
Well, you can call me. I throw that out there because, listen, you need a tribe. You need a tribe of people that are going to support you when you're going against the grain. Let's be real. I'm going against the grain right now. We are doing things here that not a lot of other companies are necessarily doing here in the Philadelphia area. And so when I made a lot of the steps and the choices that, you know, I made and that I brought to the table here, I reached out to experts. I reached out to subject matter experts. So I think first, like recognize that you need to connect with individuals who are able to offer value in, one, in being a support system, but being a sounding board as well. And, you know, when I originally kind of dove into this, I was wildly uncomfortable. I was uncomfortable because I didn't know what to do because this wasn't something that we had, it was uncharted territory. And so I think that when you are, you know, you have uncharted, when you're walking through uncharted territory, you have to recognize that you need to turn to, you know, leaders, in this field. And so, I mean, there are consulting firms available. I mean, if you look to, there are events that you can go to. I have made a pledge and I am personally committing to go to events At least twice a month, where I'm taking something away, I'm reading books, I'm learning. So one, you have to invest in the learning process. I think that that's something that was really important for me, was to just take a step back and be like, let me just submerge myself in this. Two, I think that, you know, and I hope that everyone listening to this podcast has a team like I do. You know, it was a no-brainer for us. So I didn't have to put up much of a fight when we talked about a lot of the techniques that we were going to implement and try. But I recognize that, you know, the wonderful environment that I'm fortunate enough to work at, you know, to be a part of here at Stitch is not reminiscent of, the greater.
Yep. That was actually my next question.
Population.
If they don't have an amazing team like you have here at Stitch and had at RJ, how do you... what's the best way that you think that they can get buy-in and overcome that barrier?
Well, I think that it goes back to the piece that I just said. You know, one, like, let's make it a business decision. Like, having a more diverse team will be better for the business. We know that. But also, I mean, tie it back to just having a fair recruitment process. Like, are you confident that you have a recruitment process that is vetting your candidates fairly? And I think that, you know, that certainly aids to diversity, but I mean, let's just go back to a business perspective. Like, are you wasting your time? I mean, if you're interviewing for an open position, I mean, you're talking about hours of your hiring manager's time. You're talking about hours of time. So one, data wins. Turn that to dollar signs. You know, how much money are you investing in an interview process? And if you're not confident in that interview process, how much money is walking out the door by wasting your time? We are fortunate enough that after like kind of going through this, I look at our recruitment process and it almost feels like a well-oiled machine. You know, we don't have folks walking through our door here that I'm ever wondering, how did they get here? Yeah. How is my team interviewing them? Because they don't have the skills to do this role. If that is happening for you as an employer, you need to stop.
So you just said that data wins. How does an HR person use data to get buy-in, to get support, but then to also figure out what the baseline is of where they are to see where they need to go?
Yeah. So, I mean, there are recruitment or just metrics in general, I think are really important. You know, what's your time to hire? What does your funnel look like? How long is somebody sitting in your recruitment process? Once you extend an offer, how likely is someone to accept it? These are all data points that, you know, as an HR and recruiting professional, you should be familiar with. And if those numbers are less than, if those are less than optimal, that is, for me, an easy business decision. You know, if I went to my boss, our CEO, and said, okay, so we interviewed 90 people this quarter, and I don't know why 25% of them actually came into interview because they weren't qualified. You know, if I take that number and I'm quantifying it now, okay, so that was 25% of those interviews that came in. Okay, well, each of those interviews was 4 hours long. I had six people in that interview team. You know, we're automatically, you know, figuring out what that cost was to us. You know, how can we make it more efficient? That's not a problem that we've had here, but I see that. And, you know, going back to like my recruiting days working for a staffing firm, there are so many times that we'd be partnering with organizations who like would change what they were looking for, didn't know what they were interviewing for, that had the least efficient interview processes possible. And when you're doing that, you're wasting your time as an organization, but B, if you don't have an interview process that's moving like a well-oiled machine, you're going to lose the candidate that you want. So I think that when I'm looking at like making the business case and the business decision, you know, for an organization and for, an HR professional, you know, you should know all of those stats or all of those metrics that I throw out there, like you should know them. You should know them. You should have access to them. You should be tracking that information. Because that's how, if I think that in any organization, data should always win, right? And I think that if you have the data that proves that you have an interview process that is not optimal, that you have a candidate pool that is not diverse, it can be hard to walk away from that.
So I'm going to assume that most HR professionals think that their team is understaffed, especially when there's an HR department of one. So if you are that HR department of one, should you expect to have the appropriate amount of time and resources to get this done? And also, does this process cost you anything? Is there any budget or money involved in putting this together, or it's just rolling up your sleeves and getting it done?
So So I'm a one person team. You know, we are certainly smaller here at Stitch. You know, I have been responsible for everything that we have done with our recruiting process to date. So, anything is possible. anything that I firmly believe that anything you want to achieve is possible when you put your mind to it. It has not cost us anything. We could have done all of the changes that we made to our interview process, we could have done without spending any money. I will say that we have invested in systems that aid this process. We specifically purchased a new applicant tracking system that will help me personally with running kind of the analytics on our recruitment process. And so, you know, that was an investment. There were other tools out there that I could have moved forward with that it would have been a less investment. You could also be tracking candidate names in spreadsheets. You know, when I'm talking, I don't recommend that, but I recognize that sometimes, you know, if you're working, you know, I'm working for a startup. I completely get it. Like, you're lean, you don't have budgets. So I go back to my original statement, every tweak that we made to our hiring process, there was no dollar signs that were associated with it. So it's completely doable. If you have no budget, if you have some budget, use it wisely, and use it, on tools that will help save you time. That was what I did. And that's what that applicant tracking system does for me. It saves me time, which means that I have more time to focus on the other things what you were mentioning. Yep. But if we didn't have that budget, I'd still be able to do everything that we're doing today.
Are there any pitfalls or mistakes that you ran into that if you were going to do this all over again, you would do it differently, that the listeners can say, okay, I don't need to start from scratch. I can actually learn from Sam's mistakes.
Mistakes. I think the first obvious mistake to me is that I wish I would have done it sooner. And I think that I tie that mistake back to just a fear, right? And all of us, I think as an HR professional, I say this sentence at least once a day. But that, you know, internally in organizations, communication is a lot of times where, things can go wrong. And the reason for that is because it is human nature. And this is that sentence. It is human nature for us to run in the opposite direction of anything that makes us feel uncomfortable. I mean, it's a survival instinct baked in over, you know, thousands of years, that when things get uncomfortable, we don't necessarily want to dive into it. And I think that for me, one of the mistakes that I made was wanting this to be perfect. And I didn't want to talk to Bruce about it. I didn't want to talk to anybody about it until I was confident that it was, you know, that it was perfect, that it was working, and that, you know, I wanted to be able to come back and say that. And, you know, I recognize today I was wrong. Like, you know what? I'm sure that I'm doing something wrong today, doing something today that in 3 months I'm going to say, we should be doing this differently. But I think that, you know, just embracing the discomfort and being uncomfortable is really important, especially when tackling, a topic like the one that we're talking about today. Yep. It's certainly, we're in a climate right now where, you know, the buzzwords are being used more than we've ever heard them before. And everyone, I think, is more concerned than ever in saying the wrong thing. Yep. But I think that the most important thing is that we're trying. You're trying. And you know what? If I can make a mistake or I can do something and somebody else can learn from it and try it, you know, that's how we move forward. And so, you know, that's what I encourage individuals to do, is to just dive into this and, recognize that the first thing that you do might not be the right thing. But if you're committed to trying, you know, don't give up.
And I'm glad you were able and finally ready to be open talking to me about it. I am honored to talk to you about this. So before we go to the next section, any parting words for anyone who is so jazzed up and they're now doing push-ups listening to this? They're so excited. They're ready to go. Like, you know what, Sam, I'm going to call you. I'm going to pick your brain. I'm going to email you, take you out to lunch. I can't wait to put this into practice and execute and hopefully make mistakes very quickly so that I can get through those and make my organization more diverse. What do you have to say to them?
My email is sam@stitchdata.com. Reach out to me. Let's go to lunch. Let's talk. But then I'm so glad that you're jazzed, because, I think that, we are in a, we are living in a time right now where we have an opportunity to make a difference, and that we have the opportunity to be that difference. And so let's do it. Let's do it together as a tribe.
So I know that was a very heavy topic, but now we can go into a little bit more fun.
Okay.
And my favorite part of the interview, which I like to call the real, the random, and the ridiculous.
The real, the random, the ridiculous.
Yep. Okay. I'll ask you a real question, a random question, and a ridiculous question.
Okay.
All right. So, ready?
Yes.
All right. The real question.
Yes.
Do you like bread pudding?
How did you know? This is so weird. That's like one of my favorite desserts.
Oh, man. Clearly you haven't heard our podcast before. Because I asked every single guest, do they like bread pudding and how do they like it?
I love bread pudding.
Oh,
I actually,
my gosh.
What's really funny is I had bread pudding for dessert last night.
Oh,
I was at a restaurant.
Which restaurant?
It's called Augusto's. It's in Warminster. So for any of you listening that don't live in the big city, like myself, occasionally have to find a good restaurant out in the burbs. And Augusto's is one of them. It's tucked away in a neighborhood. But they have this. It is like a coconut bread pudding, and it's been on their menu for a while, and I love it. They warm it up. It's great, but I love a good bread pudding.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I make a pretty mean one, too.
Make bread pudding?
I have in a crock pot before with like a brioche type of bread.
Oh, my gosh.
Raisins,
I'm going to have to
cinnamon. Buy
a bread pudding from you. I am bread pudding.
I'll just give one to you.
I am bread pudding Bruce.
Bread pudding Bruce.
I am bread pudding Bruce.
I've missed out not knowing this.
We've not known each other for so long.
But we'll have to compare notes on where to get bread pudding.
North Third is one of my go-to spots.
I've been to North Third, but I don't know that I've ever had the bread pudding there.
It's almost like a French toast bread pudding.
Ooh, I love French toast.
It is so good. Wow.
Well, bread pudding.
Okay. I've been meaning to bring together a lot of awesome HR people, and we all eat bread pudding.
That sounds perfect. We'll just talk about HR and eat bread pudding.
Eat bread pudding. Great. Oh, this is so happy. So, the random question. What's your favorite cartoon character? Or who is your favorite cartoon character and why? Old school, new?
Oh, this is so hard.
Well, you can give me two if you have to.
I'll go with who is my favorite cartoon? I don't know why this is so hard. Maybe because I don't like watch or listen to cartoons anymore. If I'm thinking of an old one, I guess Goofy would count, right? Well, Goofy was a cartoon character. Growing up, I loved Goofy. He was definitely someone that I related to. Today, is there anyone else that I would think of? I don't have kids, so I have not been subject to cartoon characters just yet. But
got it.
I'll stick with Goofy.
Okay,
so Goofy's my final answer.
That's your final answer.
That's my final answer.
Okay,
I'm not gonna phone a friend. I thought about it, but
okay. I mean, we have some time if you want to text somebody, compare notes. All right, the ridiculous question: what's the most ridiculous reason that you've heard for a company not to become more diverse?
The most ridiculous reason. I think I'm very fortunate that I have not heard too many ridiculous reasons. But I think that I don't think I've actually ever heard anyone come out and say we're not interested in becoming diverse. I mean, I think if they did,
right.
No, I can actually say with certainty if someone ever sat around me we're just not going to be diverse. We just don't care about that. Right. I remember that. That's one of those things that you take away.
I'll pass.
And you're like, okay, I'm not interested in ever, working with you. But I do think that, the answer that I hear, frequently is it's hard. It's hard. I say back to that, if it was nothing easy, it was ever worth, nothing easy. What's that quote? I'm drawing a blank right now. That the coffee is fading, the first cup, and I'm going to need the second. But nothing. You always have to work for it, right?
Yeah.
And so this is hard. This is not easy. I don't think that you should expect it to be. Hiring is not easy, but let alone caring about diversity and changing your organization is not going to be easy. Don't whine because it's not.
I like that. I like that. And final question, podcast. What's your favorite and least favorite part of HR?
My favorite and least favorite part. Oh, that's easy for me. So, the best part of my job always is when I get to extend an offer to someone. Okay. There's just nothing more awesome than that. Even if the candidate isn't going to accept or something, it was that moment, 10 years ago that I recognized, oh, I'm in the right field. Like that, yes. That ability to truly be the difference in someone's life. You know, you don't really think of it that way, but, you know, like I said before, you spend more time at work than you do at home these days.
I'm guilty
and
of that.
Yeah, if my husband ends up listening to this, he will attest to that. But it's so important for individuals to find a place that they feel comfortable and want to call home and or home away from home. And, you know, getting to the person that says like, yeah, like I've got your dream job right here and like, go celebrate. This is awesome. You know, it's always been the best part of, working in HR. My least favorite, and I have so fortunately never had, I was just laughing about this, with, someone here yesterday. I'm so fortunate that I have never had to do it at RJ and Stitch. So for anyone thinking that I've had to have this conversation here, it's not, I haven't. But in my staffing firm days, I used to have to sometimes broach, I embrace uncomfortable conversations. It's a part of the job. But I, on one or two occasions, had to talk to someone about like hygiene.
Oh.
And it just, there's just no part of that conversation that is ever fun. Like, hey, you've got to shower because it's impacting like.
That can be uncomfortable.
It's really uncomfortable. It's like, and it always, trust me, it always ends up falling on HR to have that conversation. So that it has by far, having that conversation is the one thing that I look on that makes me immediately uncomfortable. Second to that would be like paperwork.
Just about to say almost every other answer has been the paperwork. And then maybe we get one answer that was firing people, but it's usually paperwork.
Yeah, paperwork is definitely not fun. I had to have more than one of those hygiene conversations. Oh, wow. So I think that's why it made such a lasting, horrible imprint on me. I agree that firing people is never fun either, though.
So you're a pro at uncomfortable conversations, then?
I hope so. Or at least better than most, maybe, just because I embrace it.
Got it.
Best stuff comes when you get uncomfortable. The best stuff comes when you get uncomfortable.
That is true. You've been dropping a lot of great quotes today. This is amazing.
Hopefully. I'm glad.
Well, Sam, this was an amazing episode. This is one of my favorite episodes. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Again, thanks so much.
And I must say, I really like this in-person podcast.
Yeah.
This is nice.
So you were saying that you should have a studio, and I was actually thinking this should be your excuse to get to go see all of the cool places, the cool offices here in Philadelphia.
So when I interview people in Philly, I could definitely do that.
Yeah, true.
But we've had some people in New York and other places on the podcast, so that'd be a long train ride.
Yeah.
For an hour.
Could be worth it for the right office, though.
You know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Just make sure you, if they have like a good like kitchen or something like that, that you end up making sure that you're there for lunch or something.
Or they train me up or fly me out there. You know what? Calling all future podcast guests, if anyone would like to fly me to their office or, pay for a train for me to come to your office.
He'd love to be there.
I would love to be there. That would be amazing. But no, seriously, Sam, thank you so much for being here. You dropped so many gems. You shared so much wisdom. You've really helped, I'm going to say it, whether people are saying it to me or not, I'm sure you've really helped a lot of people really deal with creating a fair and transparent hiring process and how they can go about becoming diverse. So thank you again. Where can people find you and Stitch on the internets?
Yeah, so if you Google Samantha Glassberg, I prefer Sam, but if you Google Samantha Glassberg, you will most certainly somehow land on Stitch and my LinkedIn profile, but you can also check out stitchdata.com.
And is Stitch hiring? And if so, for what positions?
So we are always looking to talk to individuals who are bright and definitely on the engineering side. So if you have an engineering background and are looking to build some really cool stuff, give me a buzz.
All right. Well, we're definitely going to put all of that in the show notes. So again, thanks again for being a guest. And for all you HR pros listening out there, hope you like this episode. If so, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Stay tuned for the next episode and please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast player. And again, for you HR pros out there, continue to hire, train, and retain the best workforce possible. Thanks. Later, kids.